Good morning, early birds. You've caught the Worm Hay podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Snapshot testing for coronavirus, permanent funding for public lands management programs, and we explore what federal recognition 6 months ago means for the Little Shell Tribe of Chippewa Indians now. It's Thursday, June 18th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Montana Governor Steve Bullock yesterday announced a new $125 million loan deferment program aimed at aiding businesses hurting from the novel coronavirus pandemic. The Montana Loan Deferment Program will use federal CARES Act relief funds to cover a business's interest payments for 6 to 12 months. State Budget Director Tom Livers:
the interest will be covered through the public funds up to 6%, and the banks will write down any amount above 6% for that period of time, but the principal amount is deferred to the end. No penalty.
$25 million of the program is set aside for hotels and restaurants. The remaining $100 million is available to other eligible borrowers. Eligibility information is available at covidrelief.mt.gov. On a press call yesterday, Bullock also announced he's funneling more than $500,000 towards census outreach. Montana's response rate ranks 8th to last in the nation, with just 55% of households responding ahead of the October 31st deadline. COVID-19 testing sites are beginning to pop up in the state's tourism hotspots. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports the Community Snapshot Testing Initiative is part of the state's effort to detect outbreaks early as it welcomes back out-of-state visitors.
So this is the part that's going to go in your nose. You want to get it in about a half an inch. It's not the
Flathead Community part. Health Center nurse Kristen Melly is walking me through the testing protocol at a newly opened Community Snapshot testing site just outside of Glacier National Park. I take a swab and rub it in each nostril before it's put into a tube.
So then the results will come in about 5 to 7 days, where you'll give you a phone call.
Hillary Nalloway with the health center is organizing the effort locally.
We're kind of trying to get a snapshot of our community, especially those communities that are high tourist areas, so Glacier National Park, Whitefish.
Nalloway says the state, largely with federal relief money, is paying for all the testing materials and personal protective equipment for her staff. The program aims to detect outbreaks early, primarily by offering free testing to local workers who interact with tourists. But Nalloway says anyone with no symptoms or contact with a known COVID-19 case can get tested at sites in West Glacier and Whitefish if they choose to. She says people with symptoms should call their primary care provider. Local businesses like Glacier Guides and Montana Raft are jumping on the opportunity to test their workers for free. Spokesperson Courtney Stone says its guides and other employees will be tested weekly.
Our employees are definitely concerned. They're going to be out there, you know, on the river once or twice a day with usually 8 guests per boat. And of course, we're working on.
She says the testing will help make sure employees aren't asymptomatic and spreading the virus to customers and their coworkers. Several testing sites to capture snapshots of tourism areas have popped up in Billings, Great Falls, and Butte Silver Bow County, among others. The Montana Department of Emergency Services says new sites are starting up frequently. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
Montana health officials are reporting 18 new cases of COVID-19 identified through tests analyzed Tuesday. Montana has now seen a total of 20 deaths because of the virus. The 18 new cases announced yesterday mark the highest daily total since April 8th. On a press call yesterday, Governor Steve Bullock reiterated the need to maintain distance from others, frequent hand washing, and encouraged wearing a face covering.
Everybody should recognize that this virus is still in our midst, and we have to take it seriously.
There were a total of 73 positive tests from the past 7 days, compared with 39 in the previous week. Officials attributed the increase to reopening the state's economy and increased testing. The U.S. Senate yesterday passed a landmark bill to permanently fund public lands management programs and maintenance in national parks. Charles Bolte with Montana Public Radio News reports.
Montana's U.S. Senators, Republican Steve Daines and Democrat John Tester, both voted in support of the Great American Outdoors Act. The act received broad bipartisan support, passing with a 73-25 vote. If approved by Congress and signed by President Donald Trump, the act promises $900 million annually for the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which uses offshore oil and gas lease royalties to pay for playgrounds, parks, and other local projects. The act also sets aside $9.5 billion to address backlogged maintenance and infrastructure projects in the country's national parks. Both Montana U.S. senators are co-sponsors of the bill. Republican Steve Daines, who is running for re-election this year, had this to say about the importance of LWCF in a press call shortly after the vote.
LWCF, as we think about it for Montana and for the nation, is good for public access. It's good for jobs. It's good for wildlife habitat. It's good for land management. And the best part about it, it costs the taxpayer nothing.
Democrat John Tester says he's introduced a bill to fund the LWCF every session since he was elected.
$7 billion, 71,000 jobs. That is what the outdoor industry does for Montana's economy each and every year. And that is why for the last 20 years that I've been involved in public service, I have been an advocate for the Land and Water Conservation Fund.
Montana-based wildlife and outdoor recreation groups praise the Great American Outdoors Act, saying it preserves critical habitat and boosts the state's outdoor recreation economy. Some livestock and other groups oppose the legislation, saying it allows land management agencies to add acreage to lands that are already poorly managed. The Great American Outdoors Act now moves to the House, where Montana Representative Greg Gianforte says he'll support the bill. For Montana Public Radio News, I'm Charles Bolte.
Six months ago, the federal government officially recognized the Little Shell Tribe of Chippewa Indians as a sovereign nation. It was national news then, but what does it mean now for the members and descendants of Little Shell? Nine students from the University of Montana School of Journalism spent a semester reporting on the impact of recognition on what has long been considered Montana's landless tribe. This story is part of the student-produced series, Project Little Shell.
For the University of Montana School of Journalism, I'm Evan Bartle. Last year, the federal government recognized a new tribe in Montana, the Little Shell Tribe of Chippewa. As the tribe determines what federal aid will mean for its members, many people are learning its history for the first time. The Little Shell Tribe's membership comes from the Chippewa and Métis cultures. The two groups have been linked since the 1600s. Métis people are descended from French trappers and Chippewa Cree women who married during the Canadian fur trade. Their children faced rejection from all sides, as tribal elder Al Wiseman described during an interview at his home in Choteau.
Out of this intermarriage, the ones that suffered was the children. They suffered. The full-blooded Indian, he didn't like these little kids because they were mixed blood. The Frenchman, the true Frenchman, he didn't care much for these little mixed blood kids because they weren't true French. So where did that leave a little boy, a little girl? It left you in between.
The Métis spread out across much of North America, including clusters around the Great Lakes. They traveled and intermarried with other tribes, and with those tribes, they faced the pressure of American expansion. As Métis and Chippewa groups were forced west, they met groups of related people already living on the plains, indicating that Chippewa presence in Montana predates statehood. One Little Shell descendant who has spent years tracking tribal movements is Dwayne Reed, an archaeologist and the tribe's historic preservation officer. He describes how outside pressures forced the Little Shell to stop moving.
You got to think of a group of people that was connected across a vast area that were living and trading and marrying and dynamic, you know, this kind of, how can I explain it? Like, what's that game that we play when we're younger? Musical chairs. You know, so this culture, this world that's moving, that's people are marrying, visiting, you know, living their lives, and then all of a sudden there's this outside force that says, everyone now stop.
The 1885 Riel Rebellion, a Métis uprising in Saskatchewan, forced many Native peoples to flee south. Shortly afterwards, the U.S. negotiated what it hoped would be its last treaty with the Chippewa, the Macumber Agreement of 1892. The agreement created North Dakota's Turtle Mountain Reservation. Government negotiators wanted to keep it as small as possible, so tribal membership rolls were cut down. This, coupled with the low price the government offered for the land, alienated a lot of chiefs, including Chief Little Shell III. He broke off negotiations in protest of the terms of the treaty. The treaty was ratified regardless, and many unrecognized Indians were left with no chance for federal aid. Over time, these people spread out, surviving as agricultural and urban laborers. Poverty was almost universal, and education was scarce. Many people looked down on them.
There'll be stories where people called us garbage can Indians, because supposedly we lived next to the garbage yards and the slaughterhouses. But my grandma, she said, no, it wasn't like that. We're already there. So it was more like they're throwing their garbage on us.
Cultural identity remained strong among the Little Shell. They gathered in family groups and enjoyed traditional fiddle music. They also still hoped to see recognition. As the years went by, the tribe and its advocates began to petition the government. One of the leaders of the push in recent years was John Gilbert. He's a former chairman and spoke at his home in Winston about the experience.
They took me in this back room for a little meeting. It was a storage room was what it was. And they showed me all these piles and stacks and on shelving, that's your history right there. And there was rows and rows of it, 10 foot high, 100 years of paperwork all stacked in this room about the Little Shell trying to get federal recognition. I was stunned. That much paperwork and we haven't got anywhere, you know.
The tribes tried for recognition through legislative means, court arguments, and one-on-one work swaying legislators. Changes in leadership at the Department of the Interior or the Bureau of Indian Affairs stalled some of that work. Montana state government recognized the tribe in 2000, and a state Supreme Court decision affirmed the tribe's case. In 2019, Montana's representatives attached a rider to a defense bill that granted the tribe recognition. Recognition could mean education and health care benefits. It doesn't guarantee land, but can allow for the council to put land in trust under the Little Shell name. For now, the tribe waits to see what form the aid will take. For the University of Montana School of Journalism, I'm Evan Bartle.
As part of this series from the University of Montana School of Journalism, students spoke at length with Little Shell tribal members about what recognition means to them. Student Evan Bartle introduces former chairman of the tribe, John Gilbert.
Gilbert was one of the leaders who helped guide the tribe along the path to recognition. He served as a tribal chairman and can now look back on growing up in a landless tribe and his role in the fight for recognition.
My name is John Gilbert. I'm a Little Shell tribal member and a past chairman for the Little Shell tribe. When I was 5, 6 years old, I used to hear my mother say, when we get federally recognized, oh gosh, things are going to be good for us and things are going to happen for us. Well, like I said, I've heard that for over 60 years, and to believe that's actually a reality right now, it's just absolutely amazing. I grew up in Harlem. I was born in Helena. I grew up in Harlem and Chinook in Blaine County. There was lots of Little Shell tribal members there. We've went through this stuff where people know that we were Native, you know, and some turned their nose up at us, some didn't, you know. But most of the Little Shell tribal members, you know, they were workers. They worked hard, even though a lack of education was there. But by God, they always had a job. Overall, when I filled in, I was a chairman for about 8 years. But as far as getting involved in it, I would always go to the meetings. I always like to go sit in a meeting and watch this and that. But I was vocal. When you're vocal, people notice you. When you speak up, you know, you gotta put your thoughts, give input. You know, so I was always doing that. Elections were up, and I got nominated, and I said, well, I'll go for it. And there was three of us, but I was the highest vote getter, so I got in, and that was nearly. Almost 40 years ago, I believe, you know. And so I was a councilman for the Little Shell for quite some time. Been all over the country for the Little Shell, Washington, D.C., 10, 12 times, and listened to the bureaucratic crap over there. They took me in this back room for a little meeting. It was storage room was what it was, and they showed me all these piles and stacks and on shelving. That's your history right there. And there was rows and rows of it, 10 foot high. 100 years of paperwork all stacked in this room about the little shell trying to get federal recognition. I was stunned, you know, that much paperwork and we haven't got anywhere, you know. We never gave up. We just kept after it. We never gave up. One council would do their share, carry the burden. The next council would do their share. It just went on and on and on for generations. Actually, it's still unbelievable to think that we've actually accomplished it and we got it done. It's exhilarating. We've got a long ways to go yet, but all the things that are coming up for the near future are going to be very exciting. These are going to be good things. Decisions to be made, major decisions on behalf of the Little Shell tribal members. So it's going to be an exciting time.
That was the voice of John Gilbert. For the Native News Project at the University of Montana School of Journalism, I'm Evan Bartle.
These stories are part of a series about the Little Shell Tribe produced by the Native News Honors Project at the University of Montana School of Journalism. It's funded in part by the Greater Montana Foundation. Listen for more stories tied to Little Shell recognition this summer. And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.